Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Don't miss the Crip Rick and Jonathan Show every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Studio B, right here at Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun, health, and freedom.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, welcome to Free Association. It's a couple of minutes past four here in the UK, in Newcastle. And it's 11 a.m. on the East Coast. And I'm here every Saturday at this time for an hour. My name's Dennis, and you're listening to Revolution Radio. Now, Revolution Radio is listener-supported, so we do ask for voluntary contributions, for donations. There's a place to do that on the website, on the navigation bar at the top, the menu. And you can become a patron and donate monthly, or you can do a one-off donation, or you can send it a money order, or cryptocurrency, however you want to do it, there'll be a way that works for you. But we do need the help, and there are two servers running more or less 24 hours a day, plus the Hawk's Nest now as well, and the bandwidth has to be paid for. So we do ask for your help, and we do appreciate your help. Anyway, on that note, my week's been a bit slow. I've had less energy than normal, so I've not really been doing all that much this week. I managed to do three music shows out of 5, which isn't too bad for me. I'm getting there slowly. I'm aiming for 4 out of 5. And I took a break on Wednesday and took a break last night because I wasn't really feeling it last night for whatever reason. And Fridays are tricky because there's not really an audience on Podbean. I've no idea whether there's an audience on Revolution Radio on a Friday evening. But if I'm not feeling it, then I'll skip Fridays. And now and again, there's a meeting that I want to go to, or I'm just not feeling it during the week as well. And it's supposed to be fun. So if it's not fun, I ain't doing it. It's got to be fun for me as much as it is for anybody else. And that's the way it works. So it is making progress, though. I've developed a bit of a system with the music show. So I've been playing quite a lot of extracts from concept albums this week. I started playing part of Misplaced Childhood by Marillion. Played a little bit of The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. Some Snow Goose by Camel. What else have I been playing? Lots of Hawkwind, quite a lot of Gong, some Deep Purple, usually When a Blind Man Cries or Child in Time or something like that. Those are the style of songs that I like. Some Ronnie James Dio as well. Some Led Zeppelin, lots of Led Zeppelin this week. Quite a lot of AC/DC this week. So it's getting a bit rockier and a little bit less experimental over time. Mondays and Tuesdays are a bit more experimental, and Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays are a little bit more jazz funky and rocky and a bit of disco in there as well. Some Bee Gees in there, some Donna Summer. So I'm having fun with the mix. I'm doing my best to put out a positive vibe. And the reason I've got to do the music show is because I'm back to tackling eugenics again, and I can't do the eugenics without having the music show. I've got to have the fun to be able to talk about the serious. So I'm not actually going to be doing the talking, but I found a piece of the Macroaggressions podcast. This is episode, I'm going to play a little bit of episode 250 a little bit later on. I think we probably need to start with a little bit of this. Just check the audio and it looks like everything's working properly, so that's a good start, I think, a positive start. Now I've got as well as the Macroaggressions piece, which is Charlie Robinson, I think it is, I've got a piece from UK Column from yesterday, which is a more philosophical piece. It's discussing the concept of accelerationism, which I'd never heard of before. But they managed to do about 10 minutes on the history and kind of where it fits together. So I'm going to play that. There's about 10 minutes of it. And then we'll get into the eugenics piece, which is cheerful but necessary, I think. It's about a year since I tackled eugenics on here. So I think it's going to become a thing over October and November. That I take a look at it and tackle eugenics. But here we go. This is from UK Column yesterday on the topic of accelerationism.
How did you come across this term?
You told me.
Ah.
yeah, I mean, I'd never heard it. It never come across my radar before. I think subsequently I've discovered that Alex has got some background knowledge about it, of course, because Alex is a very knowledgeable man. But yeah, I'd never heard of it. But once you start to understand what it is, and it's everywhere. I mean, you can see it coursing through everything from local policy decisions all the way to global events. It's remarkable, really. So, you know, I think that we often hear people talk about it. So if the World Economic Forum, obviously they got this strategic partnership with the United Nations to quote unquote accelerate the implementation of the 2030 agenda. But accelerate can mean, in a business sense, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development just say that business accelerators speed up the process of business creation. So that is, in one sense, the term acceleration can be used. So if we move on and look at some of the quotes from people like Kwasi Kwarteng when he was speaking the other day, and talking about the launch of the growth plan, he repeatedly used the term, you know, we are publishing a list of infrastructure projects that will prioritize accelerator. I can announce that we will be accelerating reforms. We will liberate planning rules and specified agreements, releasing land and accelerating development. And he used this term quite a lot during that speech. Again, it could just mean this accelerating investment in business. That's what it could mean. But then when we see quotes from people like Joe Davis, who's the chief economist at the Vanguard, it's used in a slightly different context. He's sort of saying the pandemic function call as a call option. So it's a call option on employers to increment. So no longer could we work from home arrangements serve as controlled experiment in productivity. They become indispensable. So suddenly there's this notion of acceleration, kind of compelling change. And that is very much what accelerationism is about. So if we go on to look at the numerous accelerators that there are around the world. So we got the World Health Organization has got its access to COVID-19 tools accelerator. European Union has got its local energy accelerator and so forth. The UK has got numerous accelerators. And again, you might think that this is all based on just the idea of rapid investment and development in the business sense. However, there is definitely an ideology underpinning that term. So we have to ask, is that underpinning the use of this term? And that was there was a good article in the Guardian about this. So acceleration, how the French philosophy predicted the future that we live in. And it certainly does, because if you look at the explanation that is given for acceleration, Mike, my text is very small. If you wouldn't mind reading out that.
Quote. Says there, accelerationists argue that technology, particularly computer technology and capitalism, particularly the most aggressive global variety, should be massively sped up and intensified. Accelerationists favor automation. They favor the further merging of the digital and the human. They often favor the deregulation of business and drastically scaled back government. Although you could say that there's many more people than accelerationists that feel that. They believe that people should stop deluding themselves that economic and technological progress can be controlled. They often believe that social and political upheaval has a value in itself. Accelerationism, therefore, goes against conservatism, traditional socialism, social democracy, environmentalism, protectionism, populism, nationalism, localism, and all other ideologies.
Yeah, so it's this the idea of this is this deconstruction idea of creating problems that then require an immediate solution. So that has got. There's two wings of accelerationism. There's the right wing and the left wing. If we look at the right wing, that comes from a place called the CCRU, which was a department, a kind of think project rather than a think tank within Warwick University, led by a guy called Nick Land. Now, he came up with something called the Dark Enlightenment, which was like his accelerationist manifesto. So, and that was very much based upon excuse me, an article that was put out. So we got other people around the world, people like Peter Thiel from Palantir, Infamy, PayPal, early investor in Facebook and so forth, who's very much involved with the Steve Bannon and the Trump kind of camp. He put out an article saying that basically that the impetus was upon us upon them, you know, the accelerationists, because politics had failed and everything had crashed down, to get out of politics entirely. And this is the theory. So Land picked this up and created this thing called the Dark Enlightenment. And it's based on these principles that the world faces annihilation. Democracy is on an inexorable path to a new dark age. It is morally bankrupt and all consuming and therefore self-consuming. We have no choice. And this comes up all the time. Something must be done. We must react. Therefore, they call themselves neo-reactionaries. We should exploit Schumpeter's creative destruction. So Schumpeter in 1942 talking about his idea of this economic idea of economic dynamism, that you could use destruction, creative destruction, to as a catalyst for change, for necessary change, he argued. So this, but they take this to the extreme. The Dark Enlightenment takes this to the extreme. So to speed up the demise, because their problem, they see democracy is morally bankrupt. So to speed up the demise of democracy is needed. And then there's the left wing version of accelerationism. And that's got very many similar attributes. A guy called Nick Cernicek and another guy called Alex Williams wrote this accelerationist manifesto. And that followed the Dark Enlightenment. So the Dark Enlightenment was in 2012. And then a year later, this Accelerate manifesto came out. And again, it's got the same concepts within it. The world faces annihilation. But for them, it's not the corruption of democracy and moral decay, which is what the right believes. It's the climate disaster. So we cannot wait. We must act now. This imperative to act all the time. Without thinking, I would say, a total infrastructural, ideological, social and economic transformation. We must use, again, Schumpeter's creative destruction, same kind of idea presented, to create what they were calling a socio-technical hegemony. So this which some people might call technocracy, for example. Automation and digital technology replaces employment. People live in some sort of universal basic income because there's no work, because AI and technology has made people without any labor, unemployed. But they argue that therefore there's no class structure. Everyone lives in this kind of mono kind of urban mono class. There's no scarcity. This kind of what people like Paul Mason called a socialist utopia. So if we think about those two different ideas, those two concepts of this accelerationist concept, it's everywhere, isn't it? I mean, I would argue that this is pretty much what we are seeing all the time. This constant crisis, this perpetual destabilization and deconstruction of everything, which leads to the necessary change. You might say maybe a great reset even, or something like that. And this comes up with people like the World Economic Forum. So the World Economic Forum, in an article they put out, My Carbon, an Approach for Inclusive and Sustainable Cities, openly stated that COVID-19 was a test of social responsibility. So this terrible event happens, but we can use that. We can use that as a catalyst for changing things. But both of these ideologies are trying to create a post-capitalist utopia of some sort. For the right, that's a thing called GovCore, which is, I would argue, looks very much like stakeholder capitalism. And for the left, it's this socio-technical hegemony, which looks like technocracy. So the right, in Nick Land's Dark Enlightenment, he calls this uber kind of kind of existing power, the cathedral. But what's happening at the moment is that in their theory, the cathedral gets pulled apart by cataclysm. Well, that's not happening. The cathedral, taking his claims, the cathedral is thriving on cataclysm and breakdown and destruction. So neither the left nor the right are going to get what they want out of their theories of accelerationism, because it's being used, I would argue, by the globalists to pick and choose the aspects of it that suit them at any one time. And if you look at the way that the world events are unfolding and the events over the last 2 years, you know, you have to say that this looks like the kind of potential ideological underpinning of all that.
Yes, indeed. Well, if anybody wants to find out more about this, Ian has published, we've published one of Ian's articles on it's on the front page of the UK Column website at the moment, Towards a Dark Enlightenment. Do read that and share it, because it is extremely interesting. Now, I just want...
All right, so that's a 10-minute piece from UK Column that they was in the middle of the show yesterday, and I just caught it for some reason. I don't normally listen live, but for some reason yesterday I was listening live, and that caught my interest. I thought it's very definitely part of a show. So what we've got is globalists using old ideas, and then the left using the same old idea, and the right using the same old idea. So we've got dialectics within dialectics, and creative destruction within creative destruction, and disaster capitalism upon disaster capitalism. So there's a whole lot of things going on. There's a lot of self-destruction going on, and there's a lot of just death drive going on at the moment. So we're heading into winter. Things are getting a bit bleaker and a bit darker and a little bit more kind of death focused, for want of a better way of describing it. Death drive becomes dominant, and we've already got Europe pretty much imploding on itself without really needing to. Why people are doing that, I don't altogether know, but they are. So we've got to wait and see. It's going to be a tough winter, though. It's going to be a very tough winter. Right, moving on, because I don't know how much of this we're going to actually get through. I'm expecting to get through about half an hour of it, maybe 40 minutes. But if I interrupt it, then it won't be that much. And I might use some of this over the next week or so, maybe next Saturday, or maybe slip some of it into the music show over the next few days. I don't know how I'm exactly going to do it, but I want to play this piece, which is an episode of Macroaggressions, which is Charlie Robinson's website, and he tackles the Kissinger Report, which is a report that Henry Kissinger wrote in 1974, about population for the United Nations. So I'm just going to play it and let him do the talking, because he explains it really well.
Space, a final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Thank you.
it started the conversation about women's reproductive rights again. It started the conversation about population, population control. Are we overextended for this beautiful planet that we're on? I don't know. But I'll tell you who thinks we are overpopulated. All of the worst people in the world. Okay. All of the globalist maniacs like Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller and the Rothschilds and Klaus Schwab and all of these people say we're overpopulated, which right there, you know, whatever, if they propose anything, I'd be on the opposite end of it. So if they say we're overpopulated, then I say we're probably underpopulated. I don't really mean that, but I just, whatever they want, I want the opposite of. And it caused me to get into a document of Henry Kissinger's. I'd mentioned this before, but I'd never read the full thing. I'd read parts of it, but I'd never read the full National Security Study Memorandum 200. This was released in December 10th of 1974. This is unofficially called the Kissinger Report. Now, you have to understand who Henry Kissinger is, I think. And I haven't done a full episode on that disgusting monster, but I will. It's on my list of things to do. He's a very important person. He's not a good person at all, but he's an important person. And, you know, he was brought in by the Rothschild or the Rockefellers. David Rockefeller mentored Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger mentored Klaus Schwab. Just so we're clear on the chain of custody here in this, you have to, I mean, you could be a certified grade A sociopath like Henry Kissinger is, but you need the Rockefeller molding to really understand how far you can take things using government, media, policy, you know, all the things that the state is involved in. So what Kissinger did was he became, you know, he's the Secretary of State and deeply involved in the creation of these people, you know, his role. So what I want to do is this. It's a 123-page document. The link to it is in the description. If you're having trouble falling asleep at night, you don't need medicines. Just read this document. It'll put you to sleep. Might give you nightmares, but it'll put you to sleep. It's very dense. I read the whole thing. It took 2 days. It's not an easy read, but I had to do it. I had to read every word of it. And the reason is I didn't want to have, you know, to miss the paragraph where, you know, it undoes everything that they said. That never happened. It was consistently psychotic through the whole, from the start to finish. You won't be disappointed. It's every bit as awful as you would suspect it would be. And it is. So what I want to do is this. I'm going to, and I've got more notes for this episode than I've ever had for anything else before. Folks in the control room, fire up the document cam on this one. Fuck, holy shit. I got everything for it. So look, we're going to start at the top. I'm going to read the first four sections of the executive summary of the beginning of this document. So this is going to be me reading. Bear with me. I have allergies. I'm dealing with it. I've got a mute button here if I start coughing. So we're going to get through it. I mean, listen, living in Colorado, man, my body is still not used to it. I'm allergic every time I go outside. But we're going to get through it, because if we don't, then you won't understand how bad of a person Henry Kissinger is. And this is really kind of essential. So we're going to start with this. This is how it begins. World demographic trends. So this is kind of setting the stage for what they're seeing out there. Now, I want you to understand something. This document was written in it was put forth on December 10th, 1974. So we're going to round up and just say this was 50 years ago. Wasn't quite 50 years ago, but close enough. And I say that because it's important to understand when they're talking about numbers, when they're talking about dollars, these are all 1974 numbers and 1974 dollars. So keep that in mind. Starting with number one, world demographic trends. Number one, world population growth since World War II is quantitatively and qualitatively different from any previous epoch in human history. The rapid reduction in death rates, unmatched by corresponding birth rate reductions, has brought total growth rates close to 2% a year, compared with about 1% before World War II, under 0.5% in 1750 to 1900, and far lower rates before 1750. The effect is to double the world's population in 35 years instead of 100 years. Almost 80 million are now being added each year, compared with 10 million in 1900. The second new feature of population trends is the sharp differentiation between rich and poor countries. Since 1950, population in the former group has been growing at 0 to 1.5% per year, and in the latter, 2% to 3.5%. Some of the highest rates of increase are in areas already densely populated and with a weak resource base. Because of the momentum of population dynamics, reduction in birth rates affect total numbers only slowly. High birth rates in the recent past have resulted in a high proportion of young age groups, and so that there will continue to be substantial population increases over many years, even if a two-child family should become the norm in the future. Policies to reduce fertility will have their main effects on total numbers only after several decades. However, if future numbers are to be kept within reasonable bounds, it is urgent that measures to reduce fertility be started and made effective in the 1970s and 1980s. Moreover, programs started now to reduce birth rates will have short-run advantages for developing countries in lowered demands on food, health, and education and other services, and in enlarged capacity to contribute to productive investments, thus accelerating development. Number four, this is the last point. United Nations estimates use that, UN estimates use the 3.6 billion population of 1970 as a base. There are nearly 4 billion now, meaning 1974. And project from about 6 billion to 8 billion people for the year 2000, with the U.S. median estimate at 6.4 billion. The U.S. median projections show a world population of 12 billion people by 2075, which implies a fivefold increase in South and Southeast Asia and Latin America, and a sevenfold increase in Africa, compared with a doubling in East Asia and a 40% increase in the presently developed countries. Most demographers, including the UN and US Population Council, regard the range of 10 to 13 billion as the most likely level for world population stability, even with intense efforts at fertility control. Okay, so that was the...
Okay, so that's the intro, the executive summary, and I've got three more pieces that are all about 10 minutes long, so I may only play two of them. He does drop a couple of F-bombs along the way, but we are talking about Henry Kissinger and eugenics, so I think we can make some allowances for that. I would be dropping F-bombs as well if it was me reading it. So I'm going to carry on because I want to get through as much of this as I can, at least another two sections, I think, today, and then I'll continue with it next week. So here we go. This is Charlie Robinson again.
Their playbook. Here's some stats. They're talking about the adequacy of world food supplies, and they're saying that between 10 and 20 million people were dying from starvation every year in the 70s. Okay. Mineral and fuel resources in LDCs. This is a term they use a lot, LDCs. It stands for lesser developed countries, you know, brown people countries. And this document is so fucking colonial. millennial, it is like, you know how like all the leftists are like the white supremacy and they're doing things. This is the document they should read. They'd be like, oh yeah, it's all right here. It's full white supremacy in this document. This is, it's like, I mean, they don't really come right out and say it's brown people, but it's brown people they're looking for. And yellow people too. They don't like them much. Economic development and population growth. So they're saying they're saying too many people in the LDCs, lesser developed countries, means lower GDP growth rates because the money is being used on survival instead of investments. Okay. More from I've written out all, you know, quotes from this thing. Like I said, it's 123 pages. I would just pull chunks out and write it down because it seemed like first of all, I want to get the wording right, because if otherwise someone will say, oh, you just think that it means that Henry Kissinger and his crew are trying to depopulate the world. You're just assuming that, because I'm not making any assumptions here. Don't need to. They come right out and tell you exactly what their plan is. You just have to read the document. Now, I read it so that you don't have to. But the trade-off is you do have to listen to me read some quotes from it. So, you know, is that fair? I'll give you a couple paragraphs that I've written down as quotes, and then you don't have to read 123 of the most crazy, insane pages out there. But again, the link is in the description if you're interested in it. Okay, so here's a quote from there. The universal objective of increasing the world's standard of living dictates that economic growth outpace population growth. In many high population growth areas of the world, the largest proportion of GNP is consumed with only a small amount saved. Thus, a small proportion of GNP is available for investment, the engine of economic growth. We cannot wait for overall modernization and development to produce lower fertility rates naturally, since this would undoubtedly take decades in most developing countries, during which time rapid population growth would tend to slow development and widen even more the gap between rich and poor. Okay. This is about money. This is about managing resources, and it's about keeping the population of these countries smaller. All right, we're going to get into some of the details of how they plan to do that, why they feel it's urgent, and really, if you read between the lines, what this is all about. And it is colonialism. I mean, it's just, when you hear me reading the quotes, just in your mind, just use Kissinger's accent, because it makes it sound even worse. Okay. Political effects of population factors. The political consequences of current population factors in the LDCs, rapid growth, internal migration, high percentages of young people, slow improvement in living standards, urban concentrations, and pressures for foreign migration are damaging to the internal stability and international relations of countries in whose advancement the U.S. is interested, thus creating political or even national security problems for the United States. In a broader sense, there is a major risk of severe damage to the world economic, political, and ecological systems, and as these systems begin to fail, to our humanitarian values. I'm assuming they said that with a straight face. I don't know. Henry Kissinger is worried about his humanitarian values. God. Policy recommendations. This is what they want to do. Okay. So there's too many people. And if there's too many people, then you run the risk of the country being like chaotic, and if it's too chaotic, then these globalist companies, that these multinational companies can't do what they need to do in these countries if they're fighting all the time or if there's political unrest. So it's what Kissinger is really saying in the whole of this document is we need to lower population, not because we're some altruistic good guys are in here. We need to lower it because if the populations get too big, then it creates problems in that country. And if there's problems in that country, then we have problems with our corporations working in those countries. Got it? It's not about the people. I don't give a fuck about the people. It's that they're corporate. You know, we can't run the diamond mines if there's an uprising in South Africa. You get it? You know what I mean? So, okay. So here's the policy recommendations. They're not good. World policy and programs in the population field should incorporate two major objectives. Letter A, actions to accommodate continued population growth up to 6 billion by the mid-21st century. That's like mid-21st century would be the year 2050. Without massive starvation or total frustration of development hopes. And letter B, actions to keep the ultimate level as close as possible to 8 billion rather than permitting it to reach 10 billion, 13 billion or more. Just to put this in perspective, and they're looking at, when they talk about long term, they're looking at the year 2070, which makes sense because they're in 1974 and they're operating from a base of 1970. They're saying these are the numbers we're going off of in 1970. And these are the numbers we'll hit in 2070, right? So it's 100 years. That's the reason why they chose those numbers. They make more sense for them. Just to put it in perspective, though, where we are currently right now in the year 2022 is we are at 7,961,000,000. So we are just a tiny bit under 8 billion. And if you'd like, so 7.961. Let's just round up and say 8 billion. So we're at 8 billion now. Okay. So I want to read this. Here comes another quote. There's going to be quite a few of these quotes, but as I read them, I'll give you the context as to why I picked these out. So while specific goals in the area are hard to state, our aim should be for the world to achieve a replacement level of fertility by about the year 2000. This will require the present 2% growth rate to decline to 1.7 within a decade, meaning like by 1985, okay, and to 1.1% by the year 2000. Compared with the UN medium projection, the UN set some projections like if you do nothing, it's going to be this bad. And so what they're saying is if they use this goal would result in 500 million fewer people in the year 2000 and about 3 billion fewer in the year 2050. So what they're saying is if they can reduce the population, or if they can put these birth control measures in place, they think that by the year 2000, which is 25 years for them, essentially. In 25 years, we think that our birth control programs will do such a good job that we will prevent 500 million people from even being born by the year 2000. And if we're able to prevent 500 million people by being born in the year 2000, that equals 3 billion people by 2050. Meaning, if we do nothing, there will be 500 million more people than we want, and they will multiply, and by the time it's 2050, that'll actually be like 3 billion people. So what they're saying is effort early on preventing fertilization in these LDCs, the sooner the better, meaning the sooner we start to throw a monkey wrench in their reproductive systems, the better off we'll be, because it's not just about taking out a couple million people here or there. What you have to understand is that if you take out half a billion people, that actually equates to 3 billion people that you're taking out of if you extend this timeline long enough. And these people look at long timelines. So attainment of this goal will require greatly intensified population programs. A basis for developing national population growth control targets to achieve this world target is contained in the World Population Plan of Action. They had one of those. The United Nations ran it. It's all about getting rid of people. They hate people. They hate people. You know, we've talked about this quite a bit. And if you're going to have a one world government, you're going to need some people, but a lot of the quote useless eaters, as Henry Kissinger called them, they just suck up resources. They never get educated. They don't contribute to the, you know, the rural farmers or whatever. I mean, fuck, we need farmers, but the way they, these guys see it is these people are a drag on society. So we got to get rid of them. And, to make this whole one world government thing work well. So, you know, when you're reading this, if you're somebody that doesn't know anything about their plans for a one world government, then you might read this document and say, oh, they're just trying to make sure that we prune the rose bushes. You know, we get rid of some of the leaves and the branches that we don't need as maintenance, you know, to maintain the overall health of the rose bush, to put it in a non-human psychopathic sort of way. You know, this is the way they see these things. So if you're just reading this document, you may be lulled into some false sense that this is about helping these third world countries. Like the American empire is going, well, we're American. America, and we've done a really good job of making this country what it is, and this is how we did it, and we're looking at you, Bangladesh, and you're doing it wrong. What you really need to do is you need to do this, this, and this. You need to get rid of this population. And so if you're a nice person and you read this document, you might think, oh, they're trying to help Bangladesh. They're not. They're trying to get rid of as many of those people as possible because they don't want them. It's harder to make the one world government fit when you've got too many people on the planet. And that had always been theoretical, I think, until recently. A lot of people are now very comfortable with understanding that that is the plan. They've watched this happen. They know that the medical industry is used as a tool to help make this work. And the medical industry, as I will show you in this, is very much involved, and very much the same groups that are pushing the vaccines today are the same groups that are in pushing the same policies in the LDCs.
All right, I'm gonna end that there because it's we've got about 10 minutes, just over 10 minutes. I want to switch to Alexander Christoforou talking about this bridge in Crimea, which has just been attacked. I haven't seen this, but it went up about 2 hours ago, so it's about as current as I can possibly get. So I'm just going to set that up, share my screen, make sure all the tech works. There we go, that one and that one.
This is my first video update on this Saturday morning, coming to you from Larnaca, Cyprus. Larnaca is this very beautiful, picturesque, very historic beach town in Cyprus. It is actually the place where you will most likely fly in if you do visit Cyprus. It is home to the main international airport. It's about a 30-minute drive, give or take, from Larnaca to the capital city of Nicosia, about an hour drive to the other main beach town, beach city of Limassol. But Larnaca gets very little promotion, even though it is a really nice place. Very historic, very, very interesting setup as well, because you have an old town, which is right on the beach, like a historic old town, right on the beach to an area known as Finigudes, with a lot of palm trees and restaurants and cafes. And then it's got a new area of town known as Mackenzie Beach. And I'll try to take everybody around Larnaca for the next couple of days. I've done videos from here before. This is also the final resting place of St. Lazarus. The Lazarus that was risen from the dead by Jesus. This is where he actually passed away for a final time. But anyway, let's talk about some news, because we have got a lot of news to discuss. And the big story, the very, very big story, is the attack on the Kerch Bridge in Crimea. What's going on? atmosphere. All right, so something's going on. Let's see. Idea what this is, but it's loud. The colors are because the attack on the Kerch Bridge, if you look at the videos and the photos, it was significant. I mean, this is not like a small-time attack. This looked pretty significant. And let me just read you what RT is saying at the moment here on this Saturday morning. By the time I get this video up, things may change. We may get some more information. But for the moment, via RT, this is what we know. The bridge that connects the Crimean Peninsula with mainland Russia has been damaged by a truck bombing, the National Anti-Terrorism Committee said on Saturday. Officials said that the blast, which occurred shortly after 6 a.m., local time, caused a partial collapse of the road on the vehicle section. It also triggered a blaze on a freight train on the parallel rail section, with 7 fuel tanks catching fire. The arch above the shipping section of the bridge has not been damaged, the committee added. An unverified video appears to show the moment of the blast. A video from the scene that was posted on social media appears to show the fuel tank fire and the damage to the road. Nikolai Lukashenko, the acting regional transport minister, told reporters that the authorities are considering launching a ferry service. The 19-kilometer, 11.8-mile bridge, which runs across the Kerch Strait and connects Crimea with mainland Russia, consists of a railway section and a vehicle section. It became fully operational in 2020. So this is the main bridge. This is the main bridge. Like, this is very symbolic for Russia. This is the bridge that is connecting Crimea to the Russian mainland, to the Russian Federation mainland. And this is not an accident. I think we can conclusively say this is no accident. RT even said in the opening paragraph, damaged by a truck bombing. That's what we know, a truck bombing. So I imagine some sort of terrorist act. And we have a statement from Ukrainian spokesman Podolyak. And he has I don't want to say Ukraine has officially claimed responsibility for the terrorist act, for this explosion. But indirectly, he's hinting at some sort of Ukrainian success in attacking the Kerch Bridge. This is what Podolyak said. The blast that rocked the Crimean Bridge early Saturday is, quote, just the beginning, Ukrainian President Zelensky's aide Mikhail Podolyak has said. Quote, Crimea, the bridge, the beginning, Podolyak tweeted. Everything illegal must be destroyed. Everything stolen must be returned to Ukraine. Everything occupied by Russia must be expelled. In August, Podolyak said that Europe's largest bridge should be destroyed because it's an illegal construction and the main gateway to supply the Russian army in Crimea. Keep that in mind. The main gateway to supply the Russian army in Crimea. Zelensky and other members of his team have also stated that Ukraine will use force to retake Crimea, which overwhelmingly voted to reunite with Russia in a referendum in 2014. So it's not a direct claim of responsibility from Ukraine. So we have to be careful what we say, but this is not a coincidence.
Okay, that's Alex Christoforou from this morning. or from earlier this afternoon, my time. And I think we've got two tracks going on. We've got there's a long-term philosophical track going on and a geopolitical track going on. And I'm still trying to put two and two together, but I'm pretty clear in my mind that there's a eugenics operation going on. I've been listening to doctors this week, listening to the Dr. Drew show on YouTube, which is it's not mainstream, but it's fairly mainstream. They had a guy on claiming that there's a 10% reduction in the birth rate globally now. And we know that there's a 5% increase in mortality above the normal rate. So that's a reduction in the human population, if ever there was one. I don't think there's any doubt that that's a reduction in the human population. It's a reduced birth rate and an increased death rate at the same time. So that to me is an indicator beyond any doubt that there's a eugenics program going on. And I've been careful about that before now, but I'm pretty clear that that's what's going on. I think that's it for now. We managed to get most of what I wanted to do in. Back next week, same time, 11 a.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. UK time. I'll see you then.
It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Hi, I'm Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's iPhone thinking. Welcome to the Crypt.
What the heck is the truth, jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio.